This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit in Hanford, California with 97-year-old Dr. Russell Brookshire. Originally from Burke Burnett, Texas, he spent nearly a year in India in World War II, flying 78 missions in B-24 Liberators for the 1330th Army Air Force Base Unit out of Jorhat, India. One trip he made to Kunming was delivering top-secret cargo that he still doesn't know the details or significance of 75 years later. Maybe there's a future development there. And in general, anti-aircraft fire and enemy fighters would be challenging, I'm sure. But how about the weather you encountered there in India and when you flew your missions into China?
Sometimes the monsoon rainfall was 300 inches. Everything was flooded. Ceilings were from on the ground to 300 feet. Tops were 23,000 feet. I was so thankful that I've trained with the Royal Air Force because they were so intent on instruments because the weather was so stinking over Britain. Oftentimes their instrument training was intense, and I, with that background, became an excellent instrument pilot. And my roommate and I, we flew some together, but just on special missions. But he was also trained with the RAF, and he and I were selected for extreme situations that required our instrument talents.
In other words, you guys were so good at instrument flying that they would entrust missions to you that would be more dangerous for a less experienced pilot.
Oh, yeah.
Instrument flying.
Yeah.
So you guys got the dangerous situations,
so to speak. And that caused some degree of belligerency. In fact, the operation officer would say, "Well, hell, Scoot." He called me Scooter. "Hell, Scoot, you did it again. Keep your mouth shut and you wouldn't get these things." So anyway, we were selected for many, many, many of the more delicate situations.
Well, I'd love for you to give us some examples of those, but maybe before that, since you just mentioned the nickname, where did that come from? When did they start calling you Scooter?
Well, Burton, Jasper Burton, my roommate, we were between flights, and we had gone into the little village that was near Jorhat, and it began to rain like crazy. Well, the British had a large unit there. They had a medium-sized military hospital, British staffed. Well, it began to rain. We were down there. We got ready to go back out the base. The rain had quieted a little bit. It was just misting, more or less. And Burton said, "Brooke, we just got a ride back to the base. There was a British motorcycle there." So we got aboard that motorcycle, and the base was 2.5 miles outside the city limits, village limits. And we got out there, rode the bike, and had it for about 2 days. We rode it around the base. And then one day, the colonel, CO of our base, called Bert and me in. He said to us, he said, "You guys just can't stay out of trouble." We didn't know what he was talking about. He says, "I understand you're riding the Queen's motorcycle." I looked at Bert. Bert looked at me and I thought, "Oh, crap, we've had it now." And so he dressed us up one side and down the other. And he was a pilot's pilot. He was mean is not the word. He was firm but fair. And we deserved every bit of it. And he said, "Now I want you guys to get on that motorcycle that Uncle Sam does not own. The Queen of England owns that motorcycle. You get on that bike and scoot the hell out of here." So he ended the confrontation with that. "Get on that, scoot the hell out of here." So the guys back on the base, of course, old Bert was 7 years older than I was. I was 21. He was a squadron trickster. He was always pulling something. He told everybody about our interview with Colonel Barksdale, commanding officer. And so they just picked up the, "Yeah, Brooke, old Scooter, oh." And so the nickname stuck. and I was Scoot.
And you said a second ago that they picked you guys for the, I think you said, delicate missions. Can you give us some examples of what would make them so sensitive, what those missions were about and what they were like?
The General Tunner needed to go to Calcutta, which the air base at Calcutta was called Dum Dum. That was a big American base. The weather was stinking, and he had to be there for a meeting with Churchill. Colonel Barksdale called Bert and I in, and he said, the meeting's at 10 o'clock. We're 4 hours, at least 4 hours. You better add another half hour to it from Calcutta. And he said, you have to be there at 10 o'clock. The weather is terrible. You're to take the executive C-47 twin engine. It was airline fixed and all really plush inside. So he said, you'll probably won't have any problem with the weather with your ability, but you might have to slow down a lot and not bust through a bunch of this weather. And the general usually wants to ride co-pilot. He said, but I'll tell him, give him a weather rundown. It'd be best if he straps himself in the back. So that's exactly what happened. We got in the air about 6 o'clock. He says, you'll have to get up, have breakfast, hurry, and file your clearance, and be in the air by 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. We got in the air, and it was rougher than the roughest weather we'd seen.
So it's bouncing you around quite a bit?
Bounced us from 11,000 to 8,000. Fortunately, we were down in the river valley, the big wide Brahmaputra River turns and goes south to Calcutta. We got down there and shot an instrument letdown. Ceilings were about 400, 500 feet, which was a piece of cake for us. We'd been subjected to ceilings almost on the ground, 200 feet or so. Wing tips, when we make the turn, would be no higher than 250 feet off the ground. When we got down there, General Tunner said, well, guys, that was one hell of a ride, but skillfully done.
That makes you stand up straight, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking at a story here about Christmas, 1944.
Oh, yeah, that was one that was published here in the paper.
You know, I've heard from some of those guys who were freezing their tails off the Battle of the Bulge that Christmas and thinking about what their families were doing back home. Looks like you had quite the experience that Christmas, too.
Yeah.
You were on a bombing mission with a bunch of other B-24s?
Yeah, returning.
Well, let's see what you can tell us here. I'll read some of what you wrote, and then you can fill in the rest for me. Your squadron was assigned a mission to deliver 12 500-pound bombs each in the bellies of 16 B-24s. Takeoff was 1,800 hours on the night of Christmas Eve, 24 December, to hit a large rail center at Xinchao in southern China. Altitude over target was 17,000 feet. Release and return to base 4 hours, approximately 1,000 miles. And you're right here, it was pitch black, and the planes were flying in loose formation with the only lights being the small formation low visibility blue lights on the wings. We were over target at approximately midnight. Enemy action had been light, and that's when things started. So your squadron was attacked by a night fighter group, and some of those B-24s got shot down. Help us understand what that's like for you, what you're experiencing in that cockpit when what sounds like a pretty calm situation turns chaotic.
At night, being attacked was sheer terror. You couldn't see them coming. You couldn't take evasive action. We were just sitting ducks.
Because you're 16 B-24s, but no fighter escort.
No fighter escort, yeah. In fact, we didn't have fighter escorts until the P-51s came in. They had the range tankage that would let them take us all the way to the target and return. Otherwise, if we did have a P-40 escort, it didn't have the range to take us all the way. So we were naked for the last probably hour to and from.
And it sounds like you're pretty naked in this situation. Midnight, pitch black. You don't know these fighter planes are in the area. And what's your first indication that something else is happening? You start hearing fire or you see explosions or what?
An aircraft over the parts of the route. I never could understand how they could pinpoint your altitude so accurately with their anti-aircraft shells bursting right in the midst of your formation, occasionally would hit one of our aircraft and just explode in midair. And then the fire of the explosion diminished, of course, stopped, and you're in a total black again, wondering what's next.
And in this instance, you see immediately that, or maybe you're hearing on the radio, that two of those 16 planes are shot down right off the bat?
Yeah, read that whole sentence.
Yeah, I'll read it for you. Okay, it says, our squadron was attacked by a night fighter group who immediately downed two planes. We couldn't determine if any chutes were seen. Two more planes were hit and exploded with all crews aboard. Radio communication indicated that every American base in southern China was under red ball alert. The alert notices were yellow ball. That meant enemy aircraft was within 25 miles. Red ball alert indicated enemy aircraft was over the field and that the control tower was being abandoned and you were on your own. A number of the group was low on fuel and needed to refuel critically. It was either land or bail out, which many did. So some of the other B-24s in this group, if they weren't shot down, they decided they had to bail out if they were going to survive this mission. And you're dealing with that same kind of decision, and it's not just your life on the line. You've got your whole crew's lives on the line.
God, Paul, I don't know.
And you're a 21-year-old kid.
I'm living that all again. We lost a lot of men. And you wonder, who's next? Us? But we always live for one more. There are no atheists in the skies.
And that ultimately, that decision on whether to try to land or whether to tell the whole crew to bail out and have each one of them exit before you do, that decision is on your shoulders, right?
Right.
Is there anything that prepares you for having to make that decision in that moment?
Guts. Realizing you're responsible for the guys aboard.
Did you ask them what they thought, or did you even have time?
No.
So something told you, you can land this plane.
I knew I could land it if we could get there.
It says 7603 found an open field.
That's the tail number.
So is that your navigator who figured that out, or that's you?
Me.
Found the open field at Yumani, it says?
Yeah.
It says you landed under a yellow ball alert. There were many planes from bases all over China who were in the same conditions of low or no fuel. The base was totally dark. You landed and turned that plane, 7603, off the runway. Other planes landed wheels up, sliding in on their bellies, crew members jumping out and running as the field went red ball because the Japanese planes are here now. Bombs are exploding around everybody, and there's direct hits from those Betty bombers. And it says you guys ran for the slit trenches for protection and stayed there the remainder of the night. You don't know what you're landing into. You don't know what's happening on the ground, and now these Japanese bombers are coming over. And
yeah, they were overhead. They were bombing the strip.
You made a fairly normal landing?
Yeah, and ran off the runway, tried to keep the runway clear.
Because you knew all these other planes needed somewhere to go.
So you'd land on the runway and run off into grass if there is grass. Or
so that plane comes to a stop, and your crew's already jumping out and running for it?
Oh, yeah.
What are you thinking when you exited that B-24?
Get the hell out of there. Get in the slit trench because that was your only protection.
It says you stayed there the remainder of the night. So that's several hours. How long were the bombs still falling or machine gun fire still ringing out?
The field was under bombardment probably a total of a half hour. No telling how many bomb bursts there were during that time. Activity was probably not any longer than a half hour total.
How long did that feel like, though?
Years.
And I imagine that's probably not too different from how an infantryman in a foxhole feels when artillery's coming over or a bomber's flying overhead. What goes through your mind as you're huddled in that slit trench hoping the bomb doesn't fall too close to you?
Praying mostly.
Yeah?
Yeah. Praying mostly and trying to keep warm.
Yeah, I left that detail out. It was 20 below zero?
Yeah.
And what do you have to keep you warm?
Leather flying suits. If you remain dry, they would wouldn't keep you warm, but they wouldn't let you freeze. And if you didn't have those, you'd freeze to death. And I'm sure there were some that didn't make it due to that 20-degree weather.
You could get killed by Japanese bombs. You can succumb to the weather. You're in the dark. It's Christmas morning. What a surreal Christmas. And somebody started singing?
Yeah. Yeah. That gave a lot of people inspiration to make it through.
What were they singing?
Oh, Come All You Faithful, Silent Night, number of the old hymns.
So you hear a voice in the distance, and then another voice, and then, and I'm just imagining this crescendo starts to build?
It did build up. Yeah. And it seemed so peaceful at that time. And it gave people hope that there's going to be a tomorrow.
There's been a lot of Christmases since then. There's been 75 Christmases that you've lived through since that one. How often over all those years when Christmas rolls around do you reflect on Christmas 1944?
I don't know, a number of them. Mm-hmm. Thankful that there has to be a God.
And all your crew survived?
Yes, all of the crew. Some of them were injured, but all survived. But we were scattered in the trenches, maybe just from here to the wall there, another trench, you know. But anyway, we were below ground level.
So when daylight came, is that when you guys started sorting things out?
Yeah, we got out. Actually, we began to get out, but it was still dark after the bombardment finished.
And you just mentioned some of your crew was injured, but your whole crew survived. But I'm sure over that day and the days that followed, it became clear to you how many other men on that mission in that group of 16 B-24s weren't going to go home to see wives or girlfriends or parents again. Was that the first time you really dealt with that reality of that kind of loss?
Yeah, that I had only been in the theater for about 3 months then, so I had another 8 months to go.
How does that affect you? A situation like that, does it make you more concerned the next time you fly that something like what happened to them happen to you?
I was able to put that behind and just look forward, just thinking, well, Lord has his reasons, but I don't know. So far, so good.
It's time for another break, but there's much more to come with 97-year-old Dr. Russell Brookshire of Hanford, California, including a mishap in the cockpit with one of his best friends, something he can laugh about 75 years later. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.